Welcome to today's episode. My name is Wyatt Hammond, and I am the host of the Taming Tribulation podcast.
And my name is Jeremy Crossley, your co-host for the podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode.
Welcome to another episode of Taming Tribulation. With this Sunday being Father's Day, we are going to be speaking about three extremes of fatherhood and the different examples that all of us on this call have had with our fathers. And so today we have myself, Jeremy, my co-host, and a guest that we've had on before, Neil D'Souza, who was actually our first guest. And the first time he came on, he talked about his gang experience. And today he's going to tell us about his father and the difficult experience he had with him growing up. So with that, we know that Father's Day can be very difficult for some people, and it's a great day for others that have great dads. But for people that have maybe terrible fathers, that's not a day that maybe you want to celebrate who your dad was and the example he was. And so we're going to be talking about that example of a terrible father that you know exactly the kind of man you don't want to be, and having a great father, having an amazing example of somebody that you know you want to emulate. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And we're going to start by talking to Jeremy, and we want to know what your experience with your father was like growing up. Jeremy, tell us who your dad was, and let's just start with that one.
I grew up without having a father. So I grew up in my grandmother was the one who raised my brother and I, and I didn't know exactly why or where he was. All I knew at a young age is that he abandoned us, well, me. It was obviously a time of confusion because everyone around me had two-parent homes, more or less. And I just didn't understand, you know, why me? So every time I ever brought up the question as a child, I just got a very broad answer of I remember my aunt telling me, if you want a father so bad, I'll be your father, which is hilarious to an extent.
What you want to hear from an aunt, like that's not a help. Like,
yeah. And I was a kid too, so it was kind of like, well, that's awkward. So I think the question is like, where did I get my masculinity from? I would imagine.
Well, hold on before we jump to that question. So your what age did you realize that your family was trying to hide who your father was?
That's a great question, actually. I was around the age of 12, I believe. I remember getting into an argument with my uncle, who was, I guess, in that time, my father figure. And I was just, I don't know, we had kind of like a heart-to-heart moment, which never really happened in the Crossley household. And he told me the story about who my father was and where he was and essentially what happened. And yeah, that was life changing to say the least.
Can you share that story with us?
Yeah, of course. So I was sat down in the living room when I was about 12 years old, and my uncle told me about the circumstances that happened. Now, for people who've listened to the podcast before, people will know that my mom actually died when I was 5 years old. So, that's why I was living with my grandmother. And my uncle explained to me, well, it's not that your father necessarily abandoned you, or he ran away or whatever the case that they said. It was that my father was responsible for raping my mother. And I became a product of that rape. And at 12 years old, it's a little difficult to hear that your offspring is a rapist.
Did you even know what rape was at 12 years old?
Well, they used the term rape, and then they said he forced himself on her. I think that's when I was kind of like, oh, okay. And at 12, I wasn't – back then – we didn't have a lot of conversations about sex in the household. So I didn't really understand the context, but I put the pieces together, and it's difficult to hear, obviously, because I was just like, oh, well, what does that mean for me? Like, why did he leave? It still had the same questions brought up and all that stuff.
Can I ask a quick question? So when that was occurring and you're realizing this, was there any type of realization along the side of, wait, does that mean that they didn't want me or something like that? Or I wasn't supposed to be born? Did you ever go down that road?
I don't really think I went down that rabbit hole too much. I was just in the moment, I was more or less in shock and a lot of confusion. And I didn't really know how to respond other than like, so is this why? And I think I was hurt too, because my family been lying to me for years. You call it lying, you call it trying to keep me safe, whatever words you want to use, but they weren't being honest with me from the beginning, which, you know, I would imagine there's always a time when someone goes through something dark like that, like there's always a time to tell your child, you were adopted, or you were this, or you were that. So I get it. I understand. But no, I never went too in depth, like, well, what does that mean about me? I think you brought up a good point with that, Neil. I think what it did bring up was it kind of gave me the perception of, well, is this the reason why they loved my brother more than me? Because I always thought as a child my brother was favorited over me. And because Jeremy would always get hit harder and Jeremy would always get the worst punishment. But it's okay if Brian got away with this. Okay, it's okay that Brian got away with that. So I think it brought some insecurities out in me a lot, and it made some validations in my head at the time, or what I thought was validations of, well, maybe this is the reason why I'm picked out of the crowd.
Because was your brother from a previous relationship that your mother had?
So ironically, nobody knows. I don't know. Like the birth certificate, there's no name on there. Nobody knows. Nobody know. My brother didn't know his father either. It's hard. And she died so young. And when I was young, I didn't ask her. So
there's none of that stuff's on paper. So
exactly. Hard to,
and so you found out at 12 years old that you were a product of rape, and that's just when you're starting to even imagine maybe what being not a child looks like anymore. And so you find out the kind of man that you're from. How did that news impact the kind of development you had growing up to who you are today?
It impacted me greatly, because I still didn't have a father figure, and I was always trying to look for a father figure. I remember trying to look up to like my uncle as a father figure, but I knew he didn't look like me, because my uncle was Irish. I'm Portuguese, so it's completely different on the spectrum. I had another uncle that, my Uncle Joe, who I looked up to him as a father figure, and I just didn't compare it as well. And I remember I looked for like teachers. I remember I had a third grade teacher from elementary school who he went to my baseball games. And I always in the back of my head thought, and this is before I even knew about my situation. In the back of my head, I thought like, is this someone that is like my dad? Like, right. is this someone, like, I remember distinctively looking up to him like he was my dad, because he had similar he looked similar to me. And he went to my baseball games. Like, that's just strange for a teacher to do. So right. I remember thinking back, like, is this someone that's my dad or something? Which is sad, because like, you know, 10-year-old Jeremy was just like, oh, dad.
Yeah, he's just like looking for anybody.
Yeah. So that was definitely something I experienced at a young age. And then when I found out the truth, I was just like, well, crap, what do I do now? I mean, I grew up not necessarily knowing where to go with that. Just like, all right, it happens. What do we do next? Type of thing.
Yeah. And, just looking at how people react to things, it wouldn't be completely out of the realm of possibility for you to have found out who your father was and decided, well, I guess that's just who I am too, right? I guess I don't have a say in who I am. This is just the outcome for me. Let's make it clear for listeners. Jeremy's a married guy. He just turned 30. He's jacked. He's got a great job. He had many years in military service. He's a very successful guy for his age. And with the kind of father that you had, it makes no sense that you've accomplished the life that you have. And so with that example, and where did that example come from? How did that develop?
Well, it took a lot. It started with my military career. It started with understanding discipline. It started with, exactly where to go within life. And during these times, there was so much struggle. Like there was so much of a not quite understanding who I am, what I'm here for, what my purpose is. And I felt lost, you know? And with that, I had to go through a lot of valleys, just like everybody else. You know, I had to, you know, go through the suffering of when I was a child or a young adolescent. Like, am I going to be the person that this guy was, like my father was?
You did have that thought where am I going to end up being that same person? That was a worry. Yeah.
Yeah, and not in the context of like, am I going to be the one raping people? Because I don't think that. But as a bad person, you know, like have the perception of like, am I going to be this evil?
Am I going to have children and abandon them?
Yeah, exactly. Abandonment situations. Am I going to be that same person? Yeah. So it brings up tough questions, and yeah, I think the military just started it off, and it gave me a sense of direction. It gave me discipline. It gave me all the things that I was missing as a child from a father figure. And I started working with what I had.
So Jeremy, with this week being Father's Day, I want to know what it was like for you growing up without a dad on Father's Day. You had to obviously watch other people making Father's Day presents, and that wasn't a blessing that you had. So I would like to get you to speak to maybe someone else younger than you listening that doesn't have a father that was in your shoes that you could maybe give them advice on how you dealt with that. Or
yeah, no, I think when it comes to stuff like that, like Mother's Day, Father's Day, when they're not here, it was difficult. Obviously, everyone around here is getting Father's Day gifts or giving Father's Day gifts or receiving Father's Day gifts. And every year I'm reminded, you know, I don't have the ability to do that. So it was tough, but what I just did is I acknowledged that I wouldn't become that evil person or my dad. So I tried pushing through it every single day. And if I had someone that I looked up to, then I'd see if I could hang out with them. If I didn't, then it would be just another day for me.
So what were the kind of people that you'd look up to that you try to hang out with them?
Probably my uncle. My uncle Bobby was probably the only person that really showed any interest in my life, as that was a guy.
Is he still alive?
He is, yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Uncle Bobby then, eh?
Yeah, no kidding, huh?
That's awesome. Well, so what kind of impact did he have on you? Was he, like obviously you just said he paid attention and interest into watching, you know, making sure that you knew the truth about your original father and making sure that you had some kind of inspiration to look at. And so what was his impact on you?
He was the father figure mainly for the punishment aspect. he was the guy, every time I messed up, he'd be the one that'd go up there and I'd get hit. And I would get the beating, I'd get the talking to you, I'd get the disciplinary consequences. But he didn't, he's gotten better now, obviously, with his relational skills. But back then, there was no relational skills because he never had kids. So he only showed what he could based on his experience. No, so I just learned about that specifically with my dad. But everything else, it was just absent. Like I just didn't have a relationship with any any guy in my life, which is ironically, as I got older, I've acknowledged that that actually turned into not having the best relationships with some of my buddies. So yeah, which was something I realized pretty quickly as I got older. So yeah,
that it was hard to have relationships with other men that you did, because you never had a father that you knew how to have that kind of friendship with.
Yeah, exactly. It was a I wouldn't say a fear of abandonment. I just didn't have it, so it was kind of just like, you know, you get some friends that you talk to, you don't talk to for a while, and then when you talk to them, it's like no time has ever like gone away from you guys. But I didn't seek out those relationships with some buddies. Like, I would just be like, "What's up, dude?" He'd be like, "What's up?" But I was never vulnerable with people. Yeah. And I never had any of stuff like that. So as I got older, I learned that it's okay to have like guy friends, have some buddies so you can go to the bar or whatever. So yeah, it's something I definitely learned as I was growing up too, which was hilarious. But it, thinking back on it, it was because I didn't have any male relationships in my childhood or adolescent ages. So
yeah, it makes sense. And for yourself now, you just got married this last year, and if you're lucky enough to have children one day, what kind of father do you imagine yourself being? Do you imagine yourself being the disciplinarian? Do you imagine yourself being the lovable bear dad?
That's tough to think about. I think it depends on the gender too. I've had conversations with people about like how I would treat my daughter versus how I would treat my son. I think with my daughter, I think guilty enough, I'd probably be more lenient than with my son.
That's probably most fathers.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, it's tough. Like I don't think hitting is, you know, I was beat several times a week. I don't think that was something that helped me grow. If anything, it did more damage to me than not, because I've learned over the years that because of, you know, the words that we use, such as "I'll give you something to cry about," right, or, you know, you cry, I'll hit you again. So like things like that happened in my life. I started blocking out emotions. And knowing that, like, I don't feel things like a normal human should. I just let them get away. You know what I mean? If the thought or emotion comes in, it goes right back out, because in my head, because of those moments of abuse as a child, that I thought like crying was bad. I thought crying was wrong. So I didn't cry for years. Or if I knew I was going to cry, I kind of just told myself to suck it up. It did a lot more damage. So I think being able to have a good conversation, not beating, but I think there is a line where your child needs to know that this is serious, this is something you don't do. What that is as far as punishment goes, I don't know, we'll see. Hopefully I have some time, but yeah, it is difficult to see what kind of person I would be, what kind of father I would be. I just know beating my child for every little thing won't be the best approach, in my opinion.
Well, and so even that, right? That's a thing that you know you don't want to do. I'm sure there are still parents out there that would think that's the best approach, that capital punishment is going to be what their children need, and you know, that they'll remember what the consequences are to certain actions, and if they do things, then they'll get hurt. And if you didn't have, it's not certainly, I certainly can't phrase it in a appropriate way, but if you didn't have, you know, all of those things happen, maybe, you know, you would still think that that's a good way to deal with those. Right. And knowing for yourself, hey, I hated being abused, and there's, that was not a good form of punishment for me. That didn't do what it needed to do. And so that's not what I'm going to do to my kid. I'm going to find a different way to do it. That's a good thing to take out of that lesson, I think.
Yeah. And who knows, like, when the day comes where I am a father, I really hope I don't act like the jerk that was once identified in my life for so many years. I hope I'll remember moments of when I was beat, and I hope I'll remember moments where I was called, you know, my father's kid rather than anything else. Because it does hurt, like when someone says you're going to be just like your rapist father.
It's damaging.
Yeah, you kind of like, oh, so you're saying I'm just worth nothing.
And not even worth nothing. That's saying you're going to be evil.
Yeah.
Right? And if you know, that's a terrible thing to put into a child's head, right? That what kind of evil people are capable of. You should, you know, that's definitely not what they need to be thinking about at that age. So,
and if I give any advice to any people out there who you know, probably came from an absent household in which they didn't have a father, or their father died prematurely, or they just didn't have that relationship, I think understanding those moments of like how you felt when you didn't have that relationship, and being able to use that for when you one day have children, or when you want to have children, if you can have children, just reflecting on the importance of what you went through, so that you become a better version of who you can become.
We had some technical issues with Neil's part of the interview, so he did his interview separately. Here's what Neil had to say. Question number one, how did you see your father growing up? Was he a hero to you, a villain? Were you scared of him? What was your perception of your dad when you were a kid?
How did I see my father growing up? That's interesting. He was, well, first of all, I just acknowledged that he was my father, but he was, you know, the disciplinarian. He was the one that you got in trouble with. He was quiet most of the time. My dad was also a drinker, an alcoholic, and he would also get violent and yell, and which got really scary for a little kid. And in fact, one of my earliest memories, I was probably 2 or 3 years old, and I remember being at the table in a high chair, and I remember him yelling. And, you know, at that age, you don't understand what's going on, but it puts fear in you. And, you know, loud sounds create that fear for a child. And so, you know, for most of my childhood, my dad was sort of a dichotomy. You know, he would be this quiet guy, very thoughtful when he would speak, and smart with his words. And then he was scary when he would drink, and so, or when it was, when he would discipline us. So that was, you know, that was my dad. And he would ask you these questions that as a little kid you couldn't answer. But there came a point where he decided to quit drinking. And I remember those being some amazing years in some ways, because I was going from a child becoming a teenager, and it really gave me some ability to form and to grow a little bit, because now I wasn't as scared of being at home. You know, and it really changed the family dynamic when he stopped. And he actually went back to school and, you know, got his license to be a realtor. And then he was out there. And I remember who he became for me changed greatly, because now all of a sudden here was this man who could take himself from not being able to hold down a job and being very scary individual to, he kind of became an inspiration for me at that point, because he was able to, from the darkest of places, be able to pick himself up And in fact, that continues to remain as a, you know, a huge motivator for me, if I can say that, or, you know, like it's sort of a bedrock. It's that belief that's been built in me that things, like, you could take away everything I have, like all the money and any success I've built, you could take it away today and I will rebuild it tomorrow, and I'll rebuild it faster and better than the first time around. So it created a certain strength and confidence for me that I could come back. I could master the comeback. So as a result, it's allowed me a greater comfortability with failure, because I saw my dad fail over and over again. So yeah, that's what I would say my dad was for me.
Question number two. What are some things that you've learned from your father growing up that you want to pass on to your children as a dad, or that you don't want to pass on to your children as a dad?
Things that I've taken from my dad that I want to pass on to my kids. Well, interestingly, one of the things my dad used to say was, why do I always have to be the bad guy? Why do I have to be the cop? And I didn't have an answer for it at the time. And when he would then have to discipline us. And I actually took that on as I grew, and I thought, I'm happy to be that for my kids. I'm happy to be the teacher. I'm happy to be the disciplinarian. I'm happy to be that for them, because it's who I am in my family. I get to be that, and my wife gets to be the, you know, amazing, loving mom for them. And I'm happy to show them that that I cherish that opportunity. I cherish that opportunity to be that for them, so that they can understand the need for boundaries in their life. And so one of the things that I've taken from that is just being able to be that strength, maybe even sometimes be that scary person for them, and knowing that they can then take it into their lives and see the value of that in their life, and then hopefully into their relationships as well, that that fear isn't even necessarily a bad thing, and that it can really give you structure and strengthen your position so in life.
Question number three, how is your relationship with your father now? Have you forgiven him for the things he did when you were a kid?
Whoa, okay. So how do I perceive my dad now? Well, you know, my dad was an alcoholic. He was physically abusive, verbally. He was violent with my mom. These things were all hard to take, and I didn't know where to place him because he's my father. I want to still love him, but how do you respect and honor and cherish that kind of a man that you're terrified of? And now I would say that I deeply love him and cherish him and respect him, because especially as a father now, I know that I make many mistakes, and I know that in the mistakes I make, I'm still trying to give my kids everything that I've got. Like, I'm trying to be the best dad I can be. I love them deeply, and while I'm doing that, I'm still making mistakes. And so I learned to look at him and recognize that he's a man, he's a human being with strengths and weaknesses, and he did the best that he could do with what he had, and it may not look good to a lot of people, and it may not be maybe a certain example that other people had, but I recognized that he did the best with what he could. And, you know, and so I can appreciate that. I can appreciate his attempts to be kind, to be compassionate, to be loving, to be, to honor me, all of those things that he did to the best of his ability. And who's to, you know, unless I want to play the comparison game and compare him to somebody else's dad, which, good luck, everybody's father falls short to somebody else's dad. Everybody's father figure falls short, but he did the best he could. And so I have a great deal of love for him. And even at this point in his life, he still does a lot of things that do not make sense and that I might even call immature. But he's his own man, and he's allowed to make mistakes just as I am. And so I may not respect some of the choices he makes even to today, but he's a human being, and he's allowed to do that and make mistakes.
And question number four is, when somebody asks your kids about what they think about their dad, what do you want them to say?
What do I want my kids to say about me? You know, honestly, if they say that they love me and they say that they've learned things from me, I'm pretty happy in that space. If I've been able to teach them, if I've been able to help shorten the curve. I mean, one of the realities of mentorship is being a mentor for someone is time acceleration. It's this idea of I'm X number of years ahead of you, and I can save you those years so that you can be ahead of me. And, or so that you can get to the places you want to get to without the hardship that I went through, knowing that they're still going to go through their own hardships. And so what I want them to say is that my dad loves me, and my dad has always tried to be there for me. And I'll be happy with that.
And now on to the next part of the interview.
All right. So thank you, Neil, for sharing all of that. It's such an incredible story. Wyatt, I have a question for you, since, you know, we had my perspective, Neil's perspective, and now your perspective of what it's like to have a father in your life throughout your entire life. What was it? How was your experience having someone in your having a father in your life at all the times of your life?
Well, I was definitely one of the luckiest people probably in the world to have a dad that's still alive today and that has really always been an amazing example for me. And so I never had a story where my father abused my mother. I never had a story where my father drank too much or spent too much time at the bar or abused us or the children or anything like that. And I was genuinely one of the luckiest people to have a father like that.
That's really good. What is your relationship like between you and your father? Are you guys still cordial with each other? Like tell us how it's like now that you have moved out of the nest. How is your relationship now? Like now?
Well, our relationship now is great. We're both much in a different place in our lives than we were when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kind of had difficult teen years when I was growing up, and just differences in how I wanted to behave and how he wanted me to behave. And so certainly not an uncommon story. Even in our rougher years, there were still good lessons in there, and our relationship is great now.
That's awesome. Has there been a time when you guys were going through it where it got brutal, like where you may have said things that you probably regret with your dad to your dad?
You know, yeah, no, I don't think so. My dad and I have never really had a yelling at each other kind of relationship, right? When we have something to talk about, we just talk about it. And, you know, that's, yeah. So I'm sure I've said things I regret, but none of them were relationship ending mistakes. So I'm lucky that way.
Yeah, I would definitely say you were very lucky to have those, you know, those moments. I actually had the privilege of meeting your father, not in person, over Zoom, a couple weeks ago. And the amount of similarities between you two are hilarious. You guys speak very similar. And your Canadianness comes out in a very humorous way.
Well, those are all compliments.
Yeah. And just how you guys are so direct. It was really encouraging to see. I've never, you know, witnessed anything like that. So it's cool to see that. Well, that's pretty remarkable. So you guys have had just a great relationship pretty much your entire life. You know, as you were growing up as an adolescent, what are the main things that advice that your father gave you growing up?
I think anybody that has a dad like mine would agree that it's not so much about the pieces of advice that they give you with words, but it's more how you watch them live. Mm-hmm. And the example that they make for you of how you're supposed to live a successful life and have a happy family. And so it's not, he wouldn't have to explicitly say, treat your sister properly, treat your siblings properly, love your wife one day, don't beat your children, you know, work hard, don't be lazy. Find things that make you excited and work at those. Like, you wouldn't have to say these things. It was that he would do it and I would see the outcome and realize that's what I want. I want a wife that knows that I love and respect her and she loves and respects me. I want children that know that they're well taken care of and always loved. And you see how much work it takes to build a happy, successful family, where other people that don't have happy, successful families, you see the mistakes that they made. And so my dad wouldn't have to give me those pieces of advice. It would more be, I see how my dad is living and that's the kind of life that I want to emulate. And I can take all of the good and leave some of the things that I don't want to emulate. Right. And, so that's what's amazing about having a dad that, teaches you how to live properly, is that you can take the things you want and leave the things you don't.
Yeah. So you would say that it's extremely important for someone to have a father in their life in general, especially if you're, as being a man, the importance that you got from that, in which, you know, some people don't get that privilege to experience or even see the relationship occur, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It is absolutely imperative to have a good father and a mother figure, and I was incredibly blessed to have both of those.
No, I completely agree with you on that too. It's the idea of understanding the roles of a male and the roles of a female / husband or wife or father or mother. I think they're extremely crucial for both genders to emulate, to identify. And even if they're bad, like the role model that you try to look up to, even if they're bad, you know that based on society's morality, that it's bad. You know what I mean? It's you have a depiction of exactly what to look up to, or what not to look up to, because it's present in your life. And I think, even if, and maybe this is something that could be discussed, you know, argumentatively, it's better to have a father in your life who's not the best father than not have a father at all. And yeah.
100%. Yeah. No doubt there.
And I think, I know a lot of people suffer through, oh, I didn't have a father, or, oh, my father abused me my entire life, or, you know, even the idea of, oh, I wish I did have a father because I'd be better. And, you know, we showed three great examples of how three different men grew up in three different households with mostly their entire mentality is still intact. And I think it boils down to the question of, well, what was it that kept you guys standing? And why is it that other people have fallen, right? And I think the point of Taming Tribulations in general isn't just to see how we've overcome our own tribulations, but like really try to understand the root cause that pushed us to being the best version of ourselves. And that's what I think people are missing. People are missing that mark. People are missing that spark, that hope, that glimmer of light to catapult themselves forward to continue to finish the race. And I think that's what we got to try to show people, right? Even Father's Day come in, any other day, any day you can learn something new. And, you know, this is just an opportunity to show the world that, yeah, Father's Day is here and people are discouraged, people are encouraged. But for those who are discouraged, we can try to help them push forward while living a successful life. And, you know, success is subjective, but a healthy life in which you could still survive and be the best version of yourself. Yeah, I love these conversations that we have. And it just shows that if you have the ability to want to change, the ability to strive forward, the grit, that you can continue being successful. And we've heard it just within our stories. Now, with your circumstances, Wyatt, if you could give any advice to people maybe who had their fathers, but maybe their fathers are just horrible. Maybe their fathers are completely out of their life, regardless of whatever age, what would you tell people out there in the world?
If I were to give advice to somebody that has maybe a horrible parent, but especially a father, it would mainly be how important forgiveness is, and to just realize our parents are just human beings and they're just as screwed up, if not more so than we are. And so all the things that you wish other people wouldn't hold you to account for, they want the same thing, right? And so I would never assume to know anybody's circumstance and presume that they could forgive anybody. And so obviously depending on how, I mean, just there's terrible things that happen. And so I wouldn't say in every circumstance forgiveness is even possible. But, you know, if it is, consider that, right? And maybe just try that on and see how forgiving your parent for the mistakes they made feels. And, you know, maybe it won't be as painful or as hurt your pride as much as you think it would.
Practicing forgiveness is very, very difficult. And it's ironic how you say that. Just in the moment now, when I expressed my story, I didn't actually talk about this, but I think it's important in this situation where I essentially, when I came back from Afghanistan at 20 years old, I went looking for my father's family. And I found out his name. I found out where he lived. I found out his family. I found out I had two sisters, have two sisters. And I also found out he passed away in 2009. And I was, I think, 17, 18 when that happened. And I couldn't get like upset with him. Like I, even after knowing his family, like his family isn't the most supportive for me. Cause I came out of the blue. They're like, who the heck is this guy? You know? So, but I try to have a relationship with my sisters, which is also very difficult. But I didn't hate him for what he did. I didn't hate him for abandoning me as I got older. I kind of just took it as it is, and continued pushing forward to what I needed to do. I kind of got, I wouldn't say get over it, but I kind of learned from my past and kept striving forward into the future in order to, you know, keep working at it, right? And that's all we can do. So, yeah, practicing forgiveness. And And that's against the transgressors, people who were against you, and people who, like the person who physically abuses you, but also the person who, you know, did the actual like abuse, as far as like my situation, like forgiving him, but also forgiving my family for what they went through and how they treated me because of that situation.
Well, it's big stuff. I personally know some people, and I hope they're listening to this. And if, even if I don't personally know you, but you're listening to this and this hits you at all, but if you are having a difficult time forgiving your parents for something, unless it's worse than your father raping your mother and abandoning you as a child to be then abused by your grandmother and uncle, if Jeremy can forgive his father and his family for that, you know, look at yourself in the mirror and say, why am I holding on to this so much if these other people can forgive the things that have been done to them? And so that's one thing that's important for people to realize, that the things they're holding on to are sometimes not as detrimental as they make them seem to be. And they need to hear somebody like you that has had to forgive some of the world's worst things.
Yeah,
man, that's I feel like that's a good place to end it. And so that was a great conversation about three different types of fathers and three different experiences that we've all had with who our father was and how they made us who we are. So we hope you enjoyed listening to this Father's Day episode of the podcast. Thanks to all the great fathers out there. Happy Father's Day to everybody. Bye-bye.